Oh, super. I love this. Oh, look at that. How cute is that? Little goat testicles. Oh, those are creamy and delicious. The sauce is bright hot with ground roasted chilies. And best of all, there's still a little bit of connective tissue attached, if you get my drift. Oh, that's part of the scrotum that's attached there. It's very tough. It needs to be cooked for a whole lot longer for it to be edible.
Hey, everybody. What's happening? Welcome back to another episode of My Life as a Foodie. My name is Phil, and we're wrapping up the year with one more show before we head off into the new year. It would be nice to know that the future was going to be a bit brighter for some of us, but this economy is just killing us, man. It's depressing. At least gas has gotten less expensive. You've noticed gas has dipped below $2 now. Just too bad people don't need it anymore because they don't have a job to go to. You know, it's scary times, man. But you know what? We're going to fight our way out of it. We always do. We're strong. We'll rebound. We've done it before. I'm sure we'll do it again. The one thing, food banks are really taking a hit. And there are more and more people going to food banks now for help than ever before. I read a report recently that some food banks can't keep a decent surplus because there's just too many people in need. So if you have some cans, bottled or boxed goods that you can give up, help out a local food bank in your area, check out feedingamerica.org. Find a food bank near you. Please take a few cans of something, anything, whatever you have in your pantry, or take $20 into a store, just come out with a bag of stuff, whatever, and take it down there. Or you can donate money online if you want. Really quick, feedingamerica.org. You know, our people need our help right now, and there's a lot of people out there in need, and it's the holidays, so it's the time for you to dig in a little bit and, you know, just give a little if you can. Anyway, I'm not here to depress the crap out of you. Last episode depressed a few people, and I don't want to depress you anymore, so we're going to do some bright, uplifting things. And, you know, to me, the first thing I would think of when I think of bright and uplifting is beer. So let's have a beer. The beer we're going to have on today's show is a beer I love to have every year at this time. It's always the same, except the year's changed. Trader Joe's 2008 Vintage Ale from Unibrew. Now, there's been a lot of discussion about Unibrew in the Beer Report, Beer Safari. It was a big joke for the longest time that Groucho and Chud had Maudite. And I think at the time they didn't like Belgian beer. I think what happened was they got a bottle of this Maudite, and it was, you know, beaten up and crappy. And it sat on the shelf too long, probably got oxidized or something, and they hated it. So then they thought all Belgian beers tasted like that, and they had it again, and it tasted like shit again. So I think they gave up on it. But Unibrew is a great, great brewery from Quebec. I've been nailed a couple of times for mispronouncing that. I think around 2004, maybe even earlier, Trader Joe's hires Unibrew in Quebec, to brew a special year-end holiday ale for them. It's not a holiday beer, but it always comes out in the first week of December. So I kind of consider it a beer for the holidays. And it's in a tall Belgian bottle, just like it, you know, literally could be Maudite to take the label off and put their label on it. And I think that's what this might be. Listen. You knew something good was going to come out of that. Smells Belgian. Look at this. Can you hear it? Oh. Big, fat, freaking head. Look at this thing. Madonna me. Two fingers. Get our nose up in there. Oh, shit, yeah. Smells Belgian. There are many things to not to just like, but to love about this beer. First of all, it's Unibrew. All right, so it's in a bottle, just like any other Unibrew beer would be. It's got the cork, the cage, the whole thing. Second of all, it's a strong, dark Belgian ale. And it's always a strong, dark Belgian, right? Win-win. It's always deep and fruity, delicious, much like a bottle of Maudite. But above everything else, after drinking this great beer, and being satisfied with dip-reach flavors and all this. 750 milliliters for a Belgian beer like this. It's $4.99. Trader Joe's. Love you, man. Pours a nice dark brown. Big fat color on it, on the head there. Little light tan. Classic aroma, ripe fruit. Pepper is a little musty. Flavor is peppery. It's got that smooth, yeasty flavor that Moddites have, that Unibrew has. It's nice. It's crisp. I don't know what I'm tasting in there. Apples? Maybe apples? I don't know. I'm not good at that stuff. But it's fantastic. Every year, it's the same thing. I make a beer called Fat Tabby, and I try to make it like that. And it comes close, but it's one of my favorite beers, and for a reason. And not, you know, I'm not a thing about price, but $5. Jesus, come on. You're drinking a great beer for $5. When are you going to do that in this day and age? That's silly. So if you have a Trader Joe's near you, and you're in a state where they're allowed to sell booze, well, lucky you. Go in there, get yourself one of these bottles. It's a dark brown bottle. It's got little gold lettering on it. 2008 Vintage Ale. Get a case. Believe me, you're going to love this. Okay, so some of you may have seen a post that I made on the blog recently. The official blog, zeroface.wordpress.com. It was for Pumpkin Brulee. Now, if you don't keep up with the blog, maybe you're just, you know, strictly on iTunes. I do a lot more on the blog, and I'm going to be doing a lot more on the blog. And if you don't keep up with it, you can subscribe to it by going to the blog's homepage. Then the address bar to the far right of the address is a little blue or orange square. Click that, and you'll see the blog's RSS feed. Now, you can subscribe to that feed, so anytime something new is posted, which is going to be happening more in the coming year, more posts, less podcasts, and less iTunes feeds. So you can get the posts pushed directly to your RSS reader by subscribing to the feed. So this way, you can keep up with everything happening with the show and the blog, and you won't miss anything. Anyway, so I found something to do with that leftover can of pumpkin that you buy for pumpkin pies on Thanksgiving. And y'all know you bought one. Don't bullshit me. You probably bought two or three because they're on sale and they're dead cheap. And it's a really good deal, actually. But creme brulee is really easy to make, even for guys. And it's delicious. Goes really well with autumn maple from the brewery, which everyone here on the West Coast now should be drinking anyway. On a side note, while I'm on the subject there, BevMo now carries Patrick's beer. I was just there this past week, and they're stocking Orchard White, Black Orchard, and Saison Roux. So there's no reason for anybody on the West Coast not to be trying beers from the brewery. BevMo's carrying it. He's being well-distributed. Anyway, so the brulee. Best part about this is you get to bring power tools in the kitchen. And like I said on the blog, you know, you're bringing in power tools, and I can incorporate, you know, stuff that I bought at Home Depot while I'm cooking. Yeah, that's all right with me. Now, what you need for it, and again, you should go to the blog, and I've got, you know, detailed description on how to make this thing. 2 cups of heavy cream, 1/2 cup of brown sugar, 8 egg yolks from the large eggs, 1/2 teaspoon of pure vanilla extract, 1/4 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1/8 teaspoon of grated nutmeg, and 1 cup of mashed pumpkin from the can. Like I said, the best part about making the dessert is that you get to use a propane torch in the kitchen. And your wife can't say anything about it because you're making her dessert. And as I said, it's a slam dunk. You make this stuff into a custard, right? You bake it in the oven. You get it cool. And just before you're ready to serve it, you bring it out of the fridge, top it with sugar, and fire up that propane torch and burn the sugar till it caramelizes and gets really rock hard, and serve it immediately. Really easy. I mean, it might look difficult or sound difficult, but it's really not. And trust me, I suck at desserts. I hate to bake. This is easy. Mix all those ingredients together, pour them into custard cups, put it in a metal pan, fill it with water about halfway up to the custard cups, put it in a 325-degree oven, let the custard set. It takes about 40 minutes or so. You'll have to check it. Just so it sets. You don't want it to get stiff, but you don't want it runny in the middle either. And then take them out, get them cool, put them in the fridge, and wait for dessert. You can do it overnight if you want. The show of that propane torch firing up in the kitchen, that is worth the price of admission, at least for me. The flavor's great, too. I mean, it's like pumpkin pie, just lighter and fluffier. So if you're interested in trying that, check out the post. It'll be right underneath this one for the show. It's Pumpkin Brulee, and I think I subtitled it Power Tools in the Kitchen. You know, I think the carbonation might be a little hot on this beer. Just a little bit. It tastes... It was like a real spice. I thought it was like pepper or some spice I got from it, but the finish is really sharp, and it's fizzy. So I think it's a carbonation. But it's new. I mean, this beer just got released. And trust me, this will be around for a while. You'll be buying this beer in like March and April because it hangs around. People don't know. It's a best-kept secret at Trader Joe's. People just don't know. And people aren't into Belgian beer. But the other thing here, at least in California, you can get Duvel and Chimay for like $7.99 a bottle each. And that's a pretty good price, I think, for me anyway. If you really like to drink those beers and you can get them, you know, anytime you want them. Yeah, anyway. I love me some TJs. All right, so listen. It wouldn't be my life as a foodie if we didn't talk about China, right? It wouldn't be. Apparently now, there is a Michelin guide for China. And these restaurants in China are going absolutely nuts trying to get into it. CNN ran a story on this whole Michelin thing recently, and I want to share it with you. You know, we did that show on Shumai earlier in the year. I said then that people generally have no idea how vast Chinese cuisine is. I mean, it's really deep. And that's pretty much where food started. And we think it's all chow mein and sweet and sour pork. But even Bourdain said he could do all of his no reservation shows on Chinese cuisine and he would barely scratch the surface. Anyway, here's the report.
King prawns in champagne sauce. This is one of the specialties of Chef Chan Yan Tak, the first Chinese cook to get top billing from International Food Bible, The Michelin Guide.
So how does it feel to be a three-star chef?
I was very surprised. I never thought I would get such an honor.
You know, that's funny. He sounds American.
3, 2, 1. Welcome, Michelin Guide.
Until now, no one in China had. This is the first time Michelin has rated cuisine here. Inspectors from the French Gastronomical Guide scoured Hong Kong and Macau, and now they've ranked more than 200 of the Chinese city's restaurants. Chef Chan's restaurant, Lung King Hien, at Hong Kong's Four Seasons Hotel, is among those on the list. His modern twist on traditional Cantonese fare earned him the coveted 3 stars, putting his restaurant among just 72 worldwide with a top Michelin rating.
Foreigners now seem to know more about Chinese food. They no longer ask for sweet and sour pork or lemon chicken. They would rather try some local gourmet cuisine, and we aim to teach them about it.
But not everyone is pleased with the new Michelin guide. Local food critic Lau Kin Wai believes there's something fishy about the judging. Only 2 of the guide's 12 inspectors were Chinese.
Those inspectors are judging only based on their own cultural knowledge. They chose many restaurants and hotels, but if they really want to help tourists, they should step out of the hotels and take a risk.
Okay, now this is true. I mean, getting back to Bourdain, he said that when traveling, if you want to immerse yourself in a city or the surrounding area, don't ever eat at the hotel. The minute you get there, no matter where you are, doesn't matter if you're in China or if you're in Las Vegas, get lost. Go eat where the locals eat. Downtown, some hole in the wall. Every place has its own best-kept secret. And in China, you know, are you taking a risk? Yeah, probably. The chances are low. But it's all part of the adventure. I mean, seriously, you're in China. Go to a hole in the wall. And if you see a place that's full of locals, go in.
The Michelin Guide's director says his inspectors have done a thorough job.
You'll have to be Chinese to understand Chinese cuisine. You'll have to be French to understand French cuisine. But, you know, the passion of an inspector is right actually to reveal the talent of a chef. Whoever they are, whatever the nationality, whatever the type of cooking they do.
Michelin plans to expand the guide into other parts of China. Homegrown gourmands say they hope more of their favorite spots will be included in any new edition.
Yeah, that's the dish you must try. Stinky tofu and vegetable.
That smells like rotting garbage.
Okay, yeah, the stinky tofu. Now, Andrew Zimmern, you know the penis-eating guy, right? He has that show Bizarre Foods. The one thing outside of durian fruit that I saw him gag up, simply could not eat it, his throat rejected it, was stinky tofu. And that's saying something, because that guy will eat some stuff. He said it smelled close to death. Now, why in the hell would you want to eat something that actually has the name stinky in it? It's like repellent. I mean, I'm all for branching out, but man, that's nuts.
It's a little bit like cheese.
I think it's an acquired taste.
And a distinctly Chinese dining experience.
You know what else is an acquired taste? Elephant balls. But you don't see me eating those either. So I'm going to take a pass. I mean, on one hand, you bitch about these places not getting Michelin stars. Then you feed her the stinky, runny, rotting soy crap that turns her face a shade of gray. You know, dude, what are you thinking?
I am college educated. I have a BS in criminal justice, and I also have a law degree.
But Corey Brown has found herself turning to food pantries for help.
It's just been very difficult to manage to find long-term stable employment in this market and in this climate, because there is no such thing as financial security. And I think we all have to depend on each other to get through these tough economic times. We're all interdependent and interrelated right now.
Like Corey, more and more people around the country are beginning to rely on food pantries to cope with rising food prices during hard economic times. Corey, who moved to the Atlanta area from New Orleans after being displaced by Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, patronizes this food pantry in the Atlanta suburb of Marietta.
There's been a great increase in need, and there are a lot of people that are, for the first time, are having to ask for help. People that are employed, people with families.
Debbie Abernathy serves on the board of the Center for Family Resources Food Pantry. In addition to feeding those in need, they're prepping for Thanksgiving.
Last year, we served about 1,100 families with Thanksgiving food baskets. This year, we're set to help 1,488 families. That's a 35% increase, and there are more out there that need help.
The economic downturn has put a strain on food pantries across the country, depleting many of their resources.
The food pantries have been hit hard.
These food pantry volunteers believe they're making a difference.
It's the greatest thing you can do is try and help somebody else. It's really quite moving. It's a good experience.
Corey sums it up this way.
This situation has no name, no face, no economic status. You know, anybody, any day can lose their job. More of us should be more giving of whatever we have. We don't have to have money, but maybe you can give somebody a word of advice. Maybe you can give someone a word of encouragement, you know, something.
Josh Lev, CNN, Atlanta.
Hey, you know what? I know I talked about this before, but at the time, I think the movie didn't have a buyer. Magnolia Pictures picked up the rights, the theatrical and DVD rights, to Participant Media's documentary Food Incorporated. I know I talked about this before, I'm just not sure when. It's an in-depth look at the food industry, and it debuted at the Toronto Film Festival earlier this year. I think that was in June. Anyway, they expect it to hit theaters the first half of 2009, so sometime in the spring. And in conjunction, Public Affairs is going to publish a companion book that includes contribution from the likes of Paulin and Schlesinger, and a participant will also produce a social action campaign that focuses on the industrialization of the food industry. Yeah, pretty cool. Very cool. I mean, it's not bad. And, you know, I know people will say, you know, do we need another one of those? Yeah, I think so. Really. I mean, the more of these we see hit the theaters, the more exposure we're giving to the truth about food. And that's the point here. It's certainly the point of my show. And I'm not nearly as effective as many of these people are being, especially somebody who's going to do a documentary about it. So, yeah, I think it's cool. Food Incorporated, and I'll talk about it the minute I hear that, you know, of a release date. I'll let you know. So I'm not sure if any of you are watching season 5 of Top Chef, but it's on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. on Bravo. Check it out. So far, I think it's been one of the best seasons they've had. The group of chefs that they have this season are really talented. Not saying that they, you know, those before weren't, but these are really good. And, of course, you know, there's some weak links. There always are. But the cream is starting to rise to the top quick, and you can kind of tell who is going to be at the finishing line there. I don't want to say too much, just in case some of you haven't yet to catch up on the show, but there are the same kinds of cliques that you normally see on the show. There's three gay contestants who band together calling themselves Team Rainbow. And then they lose two members, like, almost in succession. So now there's only one left. And then there's that other pair of cooks from Europe. One's from Sweden, and the other one's from Italy. They're both really talented, and they're really arrogant. But they're no more arrogant than any other chef that we've seen on that show in the past. And there's certainly some arrogant American chefs there, too. So it's good stuff. And Bourdain is not a judge now on the show. He used to be a guest judge once in a while. He even blogged for it and won a blogger award. But they didn't ask him back. I guess last year he said some really nasty stuff to Padma Lakshmi, that hottie that's a host on there. You know, last season, one of the episodes, he said really nasty stuff that kind of sealed the fate. He didn't respect her being on the show, and I guess he hasn't learned to bite his tongue sometimes. So they didn't invite him back. I don't think it's killing him. But it'd be nice to see him, though. But they did have Grant Ashitz from Alenia. He was a guest judge, and he was really good. And I read more about him recently. My wife read an article in The New Yorker, and she shared it with me, and it was really incredible. I was really impressed with his work ethic. He's got an innovative way of doing things, and the fact that he survived tongue cancer. I mean, the guy almost died from the treatment. It closed his throat up. His face nearly peeled off. The inside of his mouth peeled off. And this guy comes back to make food that requires a super delicate palate. What an amazing story he is. And one more reason to go out and get that book. Alenia the book. Grant Ashitz. Anyway, Top Chef on Bravo, Wednesdays at 7. They replay the shit out of that show, too, so you can catch up anytime really easily. Just set up your DVR and go to town.
Yeah, that's what the guys are doing.
When restaurateur Zef Dedvukaj opened his new Coney Island 6 weeks ago, it already felt oddly familiar. Nicky D's. Isn't that like the nickname of the place right across McNichols?
Oh, my nephew, his name is Nicholas, but it's, so we named the place Nicky. Nicky D's, Coney Island. The last name starts with a D.
And what about that yellow and red decor? Doesn't a certain clown prefer that color scheme?
No, I mean red and yellow. I mean these are the old Onassis colors. Onassis Coney Island colors. This black, white, yellow, red.
About a month ago, a lawyer from Mickey D's sent a strongly worded letter to Nicky D's, warning of trademark infringement.
The N looks like a cutoff M.
Oh, does it? Didn't know. Sorry.
Guess that makes them arch rivals. Dedvukaj believes his neighbor's beef patties are no match for his corned beef.
The waitresses are great. They're friendly. The food is great. And they have some soup that's out of this world.
He also has a Nicky D's in Warren. That's the one that triggered the warning from McDonald's.
The money is not the issue. I mean, it's my nephew, you know. That's his name, so I like to keep it up there. You know, when he comes here, he's really excited. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, it's Christmas. And we're doing some special stuff for Beer Safari, too. The Beer Safari Christmas Beer Exchange video is coming soon. And you'll see it on the Zero Face blog, which is why you subscribe to it. So, you know, you can get little things like this, morsels. It'll be everywhere. Good Beer Show will have it. Everyone, Should I Drink That? Everyone, Beer Report, they're all going to have it on their blogs. Don't worry about it. You won't miss it. I'm putting it together. Everyone's sending me their video. I'm compiling it. That's all I'm doing. And then I'm going to post it on Google Video, Vimeo, and YouTube if they'll take it. I think for a while YouTube wasn't taking videos over like 3 minutes, but I'm not sure if they've changed that. So anyway, yeah, that'll be there. Everyone's going to be on it. Should I Drink That? The Beer Report, Good Beer Show, Big Foamy Head, Twice, me. It'll be fun. Have you guys seen this new Burger King commercial, The Whopper Virgins?
What happens if you take remote Chiang Mai villagers who've never seen a burger, who don't even have a word for burger, and ask them to compare Whopper versus Big Mac in the world's purest taste test? The Whopper is America's favorite. But what will these people choose? The Whopper virgins will decide.
Some people in the press are coming out against this campaign. All right, they say it shows America's continued ignorance toward food shortage issues and the fact that most of the people in the end of the world that they go to are suffering from starvation. And I'll agree on that end, all right? Not enough people know about it. But let's think about this for a second. People in Chiang Mai would probably get one taste of a Whopper or a Big Mac and they'd puke their guts out over it. They don't eat burgers because there's no such thing in their culture. And listen, if they wanted a burger, they'd be making it. And they don't drink milk either. You know, so we bring them milk and see if they prefer cow's milk to beer? I mean, seriously, this is kind of stupid. It's another publicity stunt, ad campaign from a genius ad agency and a very good marketing department for Burger King. They're good at it. That's why they make so much money. That's why they've convinced people that their burgers are so good. They're very good at marketing. They make sure people don't forget them. And that's all this is. So let's not get our panties in a wad. It's not a big deal. And for the record, while we're talking about burgers, I'd like to see you take a Whopper and a Double-Double from In-N-Out to Chiang Mai. See which one they'd choose then. They'd probably hurl just as much, but I guarantee you they'd appreciate the freshness of the Double-Double over that thing you're calling a sandwich.
This is Bubba, and this is a bean burrito from Taco Bell. Let's see if Bubba wants a bean burrito. Gonna get it? Gone. Good boy, Bubba.
Have you ever wondered how nuts were harvested? I'm not talking about these nuts. Nuts, like that grow on trees. When my wife and I made our annual trip to Sonoma, Napa region of California, we passed these orchards, orchard after orchard of almond and pistachio trees. And I always wonder how in the hell they pick these things. I've never seen it. I mean, do they go to the tree and pick them by hand? I mean, seriously, if they did, that's a lot of nuts. I mean, and a lot of work. Even if they're paying these guys pennies on the dollar. I mean, when a tree is ready to have its nuts picked, I mean, how do they go about doing that? Well, this website that I found, it's dedicated to landscape architecture. Pruned.blogspot.com. They ran a short clip from this documentary called Our Daily Bread. The clip itself, boring, woof, fall right asleep. But it's kind of interesting in how they do it. In this video, it's got zero dialogue, and they show how it's done. They go to a tree. It's ready to have its nuts taken. They surround it with a big tarp, and then this tractor comes up to it with this big arm. Arm comes out, grabs the tree, shakes the living shit out of the tree. All these nuts come falling down onto the tarp. All right, and while he's doing it, this other guy comes by with a big, giant, long tube or something and is whacking the shit out of the tree. Just get every nut off. Yeah. So then a big-ass vacuum cleaner, looks like a big Zamboni, it comes along and sucks them all up off the tarp. Sucks up the nuts. Just like that. Interesting. And I guess it wouldn't be the same show if I didn't share at least one disturbing thing with you, as if that wasn't disturbing enough. What I have here to talk about, pretty scary. And of course, you know, if it's scary, it's probably going to involve PETA. No big shock, right? Apparently, earlier this year, and I must have missed this story before, PETA announced that they're going to offer $1 million prize for the creation of affordable, humane, and commercially viable test tube meat by 2012. Test tube meat is also known as in vitro meat, cultured meat, victimless meat, vat-grown meat, or hydroponic meat. When I read this story, I thought to myself, what the hell are we doing? What's wrong with us? Where are we going? We got scientists working on it as we speak. As I talk now, as you're listening, scientists are working on this. It's being grown from a cell culture, not from a live animal, in a little petri dish. They harvest these cells taken from an animal like a pig or a cow, and they place it in a nutrient-rich medium. It's kind of like blood. It mimics blood. The cells multiply, and then they attach them to a spongy scaffold or a sheet that's been soaked with nutrients, and they stretch it to increase the cell size and the protein content. And they say the stuff's going to be grown in large quantities and used in minced meat products like burgers, chicken McNuggets. Let's not call it chicken, whatever it is. It's not chicken. Anything processed, really. And basically, generally fed to children. I mean, they're not going to tell you that, but do the math. I mean, who's going to eat anything in a cute shape? As long as it has a sweet or savory flavor, that's a kid. So you make this little test tube meat, you load it up with artificial flavorings in the lab, add a ton of MSG to it, and voila, you've got our artificial meat. So the scientists are working on the project. They call themselves tissue engineers. And they say that affordable, palatable, minced artificial meat might be available at a grocery store near you within a decade. Now, PETA and people like PETA, who are proponents of the stuff, list these benefits. Here are the benefits. It will help meet the protein needs of a growing and protein-hungry world. It will curtail the horrific animal suffering that comes with factory farming, hence the PETA endorsement. Reduces the environmental impacts of factory farming. It's healthier for you because tissue engineers could manipulate the fat content or add omega-3 fatty acids. They say it's going to be tasty and no less natural than yogurt, cheese, or bread. Now, I know I don't have to say a whole lot here, because I'm not alone in my disbelief that this is all bullshit. Yeah, it might help meet the protein needs of the world, but at what cost? I mean, yeah, we're growing. The population is definitely growing, but there are other natural forms of protein that we're not running out of that have fewer health risks, like eggs or even complete proteins in major parts of the world, rice and beans. I mean, everywhere, rice and beans. Eat them together, that's a protein. If you want to curtail the animal suffering of factory farming, put some pressure in Washington. Make them pressure the factory farms. But of all the crap that they sling at us about this, I can't believe they'd actually say it's healthier for us. Now, I don't care how much omega-3 fatty acid that you add to this stuff, it's synthetic, and our bodies don't want it. Because it's not natural. Eggs are natural. This is not. And let's, please, spare me. Let's not say it's going to be tasty. Right? That's a given. Of course it's going to be tasty for kids. I mean, who do you think they're going to design this for? Fast food, children's school lunch programs, any place that's geared toward people with an unsophisticated palate. I would just as soon force vegetarianism on people before I'd lure them to eat this. But that's the story. I'm not surprised, really. And I won't be surprised if it actually makes its way into schools and McDonald's and places like that. And that's the scariest part. I mean, these vegans are eating these soy dogs and veggie burgers, and they stink our lunchrooms with it. And that makes me wonder why people just don't eat meat. It reeks. Obviously, you want a hamburger. You wouldn't be eating a veggie burger. Eat one. You want to eat a hot dog? Eat a hot dog. Don't eat a freaking soy dog. It smells like my feet. Anyway, remember, you heard the story here first, all right, kids? All right, listen, before I go, I want to give a few thank yous to some people as we close the year out. It's been a solid year for this show. Seriously, I would not have done this as long and as vigorously as I did all year if I didn't get the support, the comments, the emails, and general feedback from everybody. So I want to thank all my friends at the Beer Safari for their support. Father Spoon, Sick Puppy at Should I Drink That? Jeffrey T. at the Good Beer Show, Rick and Dick, Mike, Big Foamy Head, Rick at Pacific Brew News, Groucho and Chud at the Beer Report, Bubby and Harmless at Brain Gravy, all the other podcasts that continue to support and spread word of the show. Thanks to listeners like Jason, who I actually met, hung out with a few times this year. One hell of a passionate foodie and a connoisseur of fine beer and overall good guy. Scott and Jessica in Wisconsin, who sent me a really nice gift box. New Glarus beers and some local dried cherries. I'll be having the New Glarus soon. Maybe even on the show. Everyone who supported me while I tried to get on Bobby Flay's show, Grill It, earlier in the year with that video I made for the duck quesadillas. Now that seems like it was ages ago, but it wasn't really that long. The amount of support I received then, not only from Beer Safari, but from like Beer Tribe and everybody just branched out. All of my family, my friends, all my family in New York as well, especially my sister. Now, I'm still convinced she stuffed the ballot box. But I love you all, and I appreciate your ongoing support, not only of me, but for the show. And while you might see fewer episodes come through the RSS reader or the iTunes feed, please don't forget that I'm going to be doing more writing and photography. And it's all going to appear on zeroface.wordpress.com. So make sure you subscribe to that RSS feed. Check out my ramblings. Everything's coming soon. January is going to be a big month. All right, so I'm out of here. Everybody have a Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Yesterday and today, days like today, have been somewhat dim, but we certainly are looking forward to a brighter tomorrow. My name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie. Salute. I was dreaming. I was so high. I was blind. I couldn't see the light. You lay still. Tonight.